Joe presents TKO, together with 32 Red.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to round 9 of TKO here on Joe, together with 32 Red, a podcast and YouTube show, and we'll be with you every Thursday. Now, it's no secret, there have been a lot of high-profile retirements in the last 8 or 9 months. We've had Anthony Gogo, James DeGale, George Groves, Tony Bellew, and the man in the studio with us today, the former cruiserweight unified champion of the world and the heavyweight champion of the world, David Hay. Thank you for coming to see us.
My pleasure.
How have you been?
Yeah, good. Healthy, looking after myself, playing a lot of poker. Enjoying life. Not at the moment. I've got this big challenge playing in Goliath in Coventry in the beginning of August. And I'm the face of it. It's big, second biggest poker tournament outside of
So you're the David
Vegas.
In the Goliath.
So I'm the David. I'm the David going up against Goliath. So what they're doing, they're flying me around the world, training with all the best poker players in the world. I'm playing 2-3 tournaments a week, just really trying to... Because, if there's a challenge, I want to do as best as I can at it. So I'm playing. If you want to,
it's a great gig when you retire, isn't it?
Yeah. So I'm just going around playing a lot of poker. The good thing is it's not my money I'm playing with as well.
Is it not?
Yeah, exactly.
So. That's a touch. You can be proper reckless.
No, but if you're reckless, you're out. You can't just keep chucking money into it. These tournaments is, you get your chips, and once they're gone, you're out.
Yeah, okay.
So I have to play strategically. I have to try to. I'm getting there bit by bit. I'm so much better than I am now than I was like 5-6 months ago.
How good are you on the scale of if zero's like the first time anyone's ever played, and then 100's like the top pros? Where would you say?
I'd say I'm about 65.
Okay,
about 65 at the moment. For instance, I'd.
Could have done a scale of 0 to 10 as well. It's easier than
zero. Thanks for that, Carl. Yeah, great stuff. Well, that's great. That's one for the edit, isn't it? So, cheers, lad. And I found out about 10 minutes ago that you another one of your table tennis rivals. There seems to be no end to these guys.
The stat is at the minute I'm unbeaten at table tennis against any
other. So arrogant about this.
Listen, any other boxer? No boxer's ever beaten.
How you make a gym? With a car park, so we got a table tennis. And we were playing, and he just ran it. We're to the point where we actually got a professional tennis player, professional table tennis player, to like come in and pretend she was working with us just so we could get beat. It didn't actually happen, but yeah, still undefeated.
That'd have been unreal.
By quite clearly. It's just the reflexes. I tell you what, it's that little touch you got.
I'm the right build for table tennis.
Well, yeah, because a bat to you is massive, whereas a bat to David sort of like.
Ooh. He does stand on the table when he does that. That's the difference.
He's doing it It's Sabutio for Carl, basically. Oh, man. We need to get this round robin table tennis.
I played Ronald McIntosh, who was hitting his head on the roof.
6'9", I think. 6'9", 6'10".
He was definitely at a disadvantage, but...
He was playing Sabutio, sort of thing. He was on his knees.
Oh, boys. Right, we've actually got to start talking about something of any merit here. So you had a career that spanned, 3 decades from amateur to your last fight?
Yeah.
That's a long time, given that you're only
38.
Good.
38 now. Sounds strange saying it.
Yeah.
38.
How do you feel in your body? Because you had so many injuries.
Sounds crazy. I feel amazing. I feel as good as I've can ever remember. Physically, I can run, I can jump, I can play basketball, I can do all the things I wasn't able to do whilst I was actually competing. And I was always had some crazy injury. I was always worried that my back was going to go, I was going to turn my ankle. Now, for instance, while I was boxing, I'd get out of bed in the middle of the night and literally I could barely stand up straight. I'm hunched over, both my Achilles are killing. I'm like hobbling around like an old man. Now I'm jump up and right as rain. It's like my body's just gone, just relaxed, and it's given me that time just to rejuvenate. And I feel way younger than I did do for my last probably 6-7 years as a competitive boxer.
Interesting,
that. Yeah, I feel better. Hopefully
I start to feel like that soon.
Right on the cusp of father time.
I always thought whilst I was boxing, once I finished boxing, I'm just going to be in complete bits. I always thought, if it's this bad now, whilst I'm fit and while I'm training all the time, eating healthy, and how bad is it going to be once I've retired? Yeah. But for some reason, it's gone the complete opposite, and I feel better than ever. It feels like I'm fresh, but I know...
If you started putting the volume on yourself that you did...
The body would just break down. The body will break down. I'm fit and healthy for a regular civilian. Mm. For a regular person who needs to run around, play some tennis, go... play a bit of basketball, play a game of football, I'm fine. But if I want to start stepping into world-class, any type of arena, something's going to snap, something's going to pop. My body's told me, you're done at this level, enough's son. Enough. This is it. It's enough's enough, and I respect that now. I think the last couple of injuries was my body saying that's it. Yeah. And I snapped my bicep and my Achilles like in a 6 month period, and that's like two bad injuries for a boxer. Yeah. So time to call it quits.
Because you had an injury going into Commonwealth Games when you were a lot younger. 2002. Yeah.
I've been plagued with injuries. I think the reason why I've been so injury prone is because I'm so dynamic and explosive. Everything I do is 100%.
You've done your hamstring, haven't you?
I've done my just because I can run. Most people can't pull their hamstring. I can get up now and generate so much force running that my hamstring, maybe not both of them, but one of them will tear. But most people can't explode that much to tear it.
You're fast twitch, basically.
Very, very much fast. Yeah. And it's worked great in the ring because it means I can go from here, bang, knock people out without trying. But the downside is the force generated, biceps tear, rotator cuffs, everything seems to pop. I've done hamstrings so many times, calf, you just can't generate that much power and not get the downside. So I've got the high knockout ratio, but I've got the high injury rate.
That's interesting.
So I'm kind of happy how it worked out, because, the fact that I was been able to knock so many people out over the years meant I didn't have the ring time, meaning I didn't take that many punches. So my career's meant to go on longer. Whereas someone who couldn't punch so hard and had to go 10, 12 rounds every time, that's when the damage is accumulated.
It's interesting.
It kind of balanced itself out.
I think those attributes of explosivity and the speed of your movement and that power at cruiserweight was one of the reasons why, as not an enormous guy, you could step up. Because we were talking about Alexander Usyk moving up as somebody that is special and unique in that cruiserweight division. And in order to mix it with the real giants as they are these days, because the old heavyweights weren't that much bigger than
Ali. I'm the same size as Ali.
Yeah, Foreman was 6'4". People think of Big George, but these days he wouldn't have even been
Was he at 215 pounds when he fought Ali, and he was considered a monster at the time. And in today's time, he was, he'd be considered a very, let's say, take 15 pounds off and go and fight in the cruiserweight division.
The difference between David and Usyk is David has always been a serious puncher, and he's been athletic and he can move around. Usyk's more of a mover, like fluid mover, but you could put the big heavyweights over. Like, he's the only man that ever really hurt Valuev, who was
got amazing 12th round
giant, you know what I mean?
Yeah, speaking of David and Goliath, I mean, that was your coming out party at heavyweight, really, wasn't it? You had one fight before that.
I had one fight against a guy called Monty Two Guns Barrett, who was like a top 10 ranked heavyweight at the time. As my first.
Did he fall?
He ran into the ring, because I was in a change room and I it was at the O2 Arena, and my first fight, thinking, okay, it's South London, I had won the cruiserweight unified for the belts against Enzo Macronelli in that same venue the fight before. So I thought, this is all my people going to be here. And I'm in a change room waiting to come in, and I heard this big roar, and I'm thinking, where does this guy get all these fans from? I was like, how does anyone know who he is? He's from New York. Anyway, I come out, I had the fight, knock him out in 5 rounds. Then afterwards, I realized he ran to the ring, tried to vault the top rope, caught his foot on it, and landed on his head. And you can YouTube that and see that for yourself. But that's why. But it wasn't the roar. Everyone was just laughing. Everyone just cracked up at this guy landing on his head.
Wow.
So it was a tough fight. He decked me pretty hard.
Yeah, early in the
fight. Yeah, he kind of knocked me down. And it was the round that I knocked him out. And he was a sort of flash knockdown. And then when I was on the floor, he hit me with a big shot. And that really, I was like, oh, spaced me out. But then I chinned him about 20 seconds later, so it worked out.
Yeah, it worked out all right. And you go from... Because that was a sensible opponent in the sense that he was... I think he was about 36, 37 at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
He was 6'3". He wasn't like a monster. Mm-hmm. And when you look at... I mean, Usyk, potentially stepping up. They're looking at guys of that kind of size for his initiation.
I think that's where Carlos Takam is. I'm not sure if that's happening. It'd be a good opponent. I used Carlos Takam as a chief sparring partner when I fought... Derek Chisora, and he's a handful.
Remember
and
you saying, yeah.
Yeah, he's a real handful. He just keeps coming. And it will show whether Usyk can deal with a real heavyweight, because Takam is a real heavyweight. He's a big, solid guy with a solid chin. And I think that'll show people if he can mix in the heavyweight division. I think he needs to generate a little bit more power with his shots. He's super skillful. He's got you can't teach him any more skills than he's got.
Mm.
I think the reason why I was able to have the success I did at heavyweight was because I was able to gain the big man's respect by hitting him with a hard shot. Mm. The big guys are used to sort of coming forward and walking in shots. But when you hit a big man and it shakes through his boots, he thinks, oh, I can't just walk forward now. Or every time he jabs you, you slip and counter him. It stops him punching. Can Usyk counter to the point where he hurts the heavyweight and stuns him and stops him punching? I had a thing where I was able to stop and nullify my opponent by punishing him, and I did it in the first two rounds. So I'd have to hit him as hard as I can after when he's jabbed me. When he throws a jab, just trying to impose his size. As soon as he puts a hand up, you slip inside and crack him and do it a couple of times. He then thinks, okay, I can't really jab anymore. And then he's already on your... He's where you want him to be. Mm. You can start playing from then. Then you can relax, drop your hands and bait him out and then really counter him. I think Usyk has the ability to do that, but you have to get into range to do it. You can't run away all the time. Sometimes you've got to come into the danger zone and really land some big shots. Mm. Usyk has shown that he can. He's got all the skills. He beat all the guys as an amateur. Olympic gold medalist. You know, he won all the belts at cruiserweight. You know, his fight. But then again, Sam said that the fight he had with Tony Bellew. You know, I had Tony Bellew winning that fight. So he can be outboxed. Mm. He can be outboxed. And, you know, Tony Bellew is a similar size to him. So it's a really interesting one. I think if anyone's going to go on to the heavyweight division and be the cruiserweight and heavyweight, because it's only me and Evander Holyfield who's ever been cruiserweight champion, then heavyweight, I think for the moment he's the only guy who can do it soon, other than Akoli. You know, I think Akoli...
Big guy, isn't
he? He's a massive, massive guy. And I think of all the cruiserweights outside of Usyk, I think Lawrence is the guy who has the frame. He has the punch power. I've watched him do some amazing rounds of sparring behind closed doors, and he's so much bigger than me. Mm. I've stood there. He's literally two inches taller than me, wider than me, longer arms. I'm thinking, this guy can be a two-weight world champion. Mm. I'm positive about it. He can take a shot as well. You know, a lot of tall, skinny guys can't really take a shot, but he can take a shot. So I think of all the heavyweight, you know, as good as Usyk is, I think Akoli has the physical attributes to go further than him. Obviously, he's only a novice now, and he's only had the Commonwealth champion. But once he starts challenging for these world titles, I think he's going to be the next guy. If it can't be Usyk, I definitely think Lawrence is the next guy. He's a little bit behind in terms of where he is in the pecking order of the cruiserweight division, but he's the next danger man.
Because obviously,
remember I said that here first.
Because you've got obviously Usyk and Gassiev moving up to heavyweight, which leaves a few gaps. You've got like Andrew Tabiti and Dorticos, sort of who perform well in the Super Series. Mm. Lawrence is looking to step up, but they think against an old Denis Lebedev. I mean, you won the European title and had, I think, four defences in about a year. Do you think, Carl, we're slightly in danger of moving, because of the gaps that have appeared with, like, yourself retiring, Tony, and all the rest of the guys we mentioned at the top of the show, in danger of trying to rush those young guys to fill those gaps before they're ready?
I'm not sure, and that's a job of a good management team and a good promotional outfit behind you. Like, boxers, and I've always said it, boxers will fight anyone, and it's about getting the right fights at the right time. So Lawrence Okolie, although we're talking about him and other guys moving up, he doesn't need to be pushed too far too soon. But I agree with David and what you're saying. He could definitely be a cruiserweight world champion. He's definitely got the frame to be a good heavyweight too.
For sure.
Everyone always says he's deceptive, I think, because he looks tall and stringy. He's a very physically strong guy, hard to push back, and he's done as many rounds with Anthony Joshua as probably anyone in the world as well, which is stands you in good stead, I suppose.
So he knows what it's like to mix with the big men. Mm. And by all accounts, he's held his own against everybody, all the big guys.
So speaking of big guys, Nikolai Valuev. Mm. I can remember watching it growing up as a fan of yours in the 2000s, and then suddenly this guy comes out of the Russian mountains. When did you... there must have been a point, because he's such a striking guy to look at, there must have been a point where you first heard of him, first saw him.
I went to see him fight in East London. He was actually managed by Frank Maloney many, many moons ago, and I was still an amateur. I was probably 15 years old at the time, and I heard about this giant... He wasn't world champion then, he was only just coming through. And I heard about this big freak show heavyweight who's 7 foot something, and he's fighting East London. So I remember I went down there with my boxing team at Fitzroy Lodge, and I saw the size of this guy. He was only fighting the pudding, he knocked someone out. But I remember going up next to him thinking, what the hell?
Yeah.
And then fast forward 15 years or what it was, and then I'm getting in the ring with him.
Oh, was that long ago?
Yeah, it was a real, real long time ago.
Wow. You
like, how does Frank Maloney end up managing Nikolai Valuev? How does that even come about?
Yeah,
no clue.
Good question.
But, like you look at him and he's like, you think just because of the size of him and the way he looks that he's got to be a big thunderhead.
Yeah,
but he's actually pretty clever.
He was a lot faster than I hoped he'd be. Yeah. I was hoping he'd be way slower than he was because he doesn't put too much weight into his shots. He's able to just kind of flick his arm out.
But
his arm's so heavy that's like a regular shot from someone putting some meat into it. So it was really funny because when I was a little kid, I used to watch Rocky IV as my favorite movie. When Rocky went to Russia to fight Ivan Drago, and for some reason, I've always thought I'm going to fight this big Russian for the heavyweight title. I said I was going to be heavyweight champ since I was even younger than that. And over the years, whenever I visualize being heavyweight champion, it's always against some giant Russian guy. And then randomly, here I am. I had that opportunity, for the WBA title, So it was an amazing experience because I kind of knew walking into it, I thought, this is it. This is what my whole life's been set for, because I've said it to so many people growing up, that I'm going to be heavyweight champion of the world. I've got my own version of Ivan Drago and Nikolai Valuev.
I remember watching the fight, and so I was actually in
primary school.
I was with Paddy Barnes, and we watched it in Paddy Barnes's flat he had at the time, and there was a squad of us over watching it. And I'm watching the fight. I just remember the last round, we all fucking erupted, like, holy shit, the big man's
the
going
big
here.
Right hand. And you were champion out to use for most of that fight.
I hit him with the one that hurt him was the big left hook. Yeah, I hurt my right hand earlier on in the fight. But I had to try to change my style quite a bit to sort of influence the judges and the fact that having a regular boxing match with him, he's just too big. So I had to hit him with hard shots and then step away and stay calm and walk around him. Like I'm the sort of bull. He's the bull, I'm the matador. Just making him
He's
look
in the centre, just doing circles,
Exactly. So it worked the treat. And it was an awkward fight. It wasn't a tough fight. It was a physically demanding fight because I had to move more. I couldn't just throw a jab like that. I had to come in, I had to faint, then come in, give my shots, and then get out and roll. So I had to do that continuously without getting hit at all because, I'm effectively a cruiserweight. I was only 15'7", I think, for that fight. It was 23-something stone, so he had a bit of a weight advantage. So I couldn't afford to kind of just do my work and step out as he throws a big hook, get caught at the end of it. It's just too heavy, and it just done me.
And you did a lot of work to the body because I guess his head's a massive target, but also
I had to keep hitting him in his solar plexus, but he just felt really solid. I've never hit anybody.
Do you think you hurt him to the body at all?
Nah. I remember digging him really, and it just
so
just,
thick.
Yeah, it just did nothing. We kind of bounced. I was like hitting a heavy bag. It was a very strange sensation.
Yeah, to feel like you can't move somebody at all.
No.
And you're a puncher.
I think I got into like two or three clinches, and I don't bother. I had all this hairy hair in my face. I'm like, but thankfully, the referee broke it, and I was able to move around and carry on with my matador move. But yeah, it's good memory. It's a long time ago.
10 years ago.
2009.
No, sorry.
2009. Yeah, nearly 10 years.
And you must have known, or did you know you'd done enough? Did you?
Yeah. I felt like because I kind of count in my head how many clean punches I land on him and how many he lands on me. And I was out landing him. There wasn't a big punch output. The way I saw it, if you throw 150 punches and land 150 and he lands 100, as far as the judges are concerned, it's a lot of punches. Whereas if I threw 20 clean shots and landed, he landed two, that's a clear difference. I'm landing every 20 seconds and he lands once a minute. It just makes it so clear for the judges. Yeah. One judge actually had it a draw. The other two had me by, I think, 4 or 6 rounds. Had me quite big.
That's what you often say about Fury and Klitschko, isn't it? Because everyone remembers it as a schooling, but actually it was... He won most of the rounds, but there wasn't a lot thrown by either party.
It wasn't a lot of
movement. Yeah. Hence how you score that.
Talk about that as being so one-sided, that fight, I don't get it.
It wasn't one-sided.
I think Fury won the fight, but it was pretty close.
I'm looking forward to when these two get it back on again.
Yeah.
Because you can see it from both fighters' perspective. You can see Wilder missing aimlessly in the first fight.
Wilder Fury you're talking about.
Wilder Fury. You can see what he'll need to do in a rematch in terms of not trying so hard and trying to get behind his boxing. Mm. And you can see also Fury learning from that fight
he had.
Getting better
and after
then
the
shots that he got caught with, will he get caught this time? Because he's been in there at that level. He went from no level to world level and nearly did it.
Yeah.
So now he's done. Now he's got back into world level flow. He's only going to be better, but that works also for Fury. So both fighters are going to be improved, but who can improve the most?
Yeah,
it's a really interesting fight.
I mean, Wilder hasn't shown a great deal of variety from fight to fight. Can he make those adjustments at 33 now?
I'm not sure. The thing is, well, yeah, why not? It's like he's not an old heavyweight at that age. Certainly.
How many miles on a clock has he got?
Not a lot. He chins people. He puts them to sleep, most of them. I think he's only went the distance twice, in 40 fights or whatever the record is. So, but he's always so dangerous because, you know, Wilder is an aim, wild by nature, but he swings from his boots. Mm. But if he lands, like, he can take any of these boys out.
He's the kind of guy that very skillful fighters can make him look very silly. And I can remember the first time seeing him look particularly silly. He was actually in the sparring video of you and him. And I know, obviously, selective clips are put out, you know, that favour one side or the other. But it looked as if, you know, you were dealing with him well in sparring. That was a few years ago.
He's got... when he's wild when he normally has people hurt. You can't just be wild at world level. You get knocked out. I mean, he has been knocked out for a reason. Because I think his worst fight, technically, was the Fury fight. Mm. I've never seen him literally come in. He was coming over the shot and missing. His timing was way out. I think he really wanted it so much. But it was the first fight he was in there against someone...
who could move their feet.
Who could move feet. And someone who he didn't really fear. Against Louis Ortiz, I think he feared him a little bit because he was a bogeyman. He was a southpaw, he was Cuban, he had a load of amateur fights. So he was a real danger man for him. So he switched on, he was really jabbing well in his work, and he got hurt a couple of times, but he was able to close the show with Fury. He didn't walk in there with that same fear. It looked like he walked in there just went, as soon as I hit him on the chin, I'm going to knock him out.
Yeah.
He kind of maybe started reading his own press clippings and didn't really... realise the reason why he's been successful in the past is because he's got a great jab.
I've always said this.
His jab's fantastic, but he didn't use it in that fight.
He's a much better jab.
I've been in there, believe me, I've been there with some great jabbers, and his jab is world class. He's got a hard jab, straight shots. He wasn't throwing straight shots, he was throwing all hooks. And I think he'll watch the fight back and go, ugh, I could have made this way easier. But it's not going to be easy next time because Fury's going to be better. He's going to be better, and Fury's going to be better. So that's why I just want to see how much better both fighters can be. It's going to be a great fight.
Do you think he took that early because he thought Fury was kind of still on the ascendancy and he thought he could catch him before he kind of hit his peak again?
Well, probably. I think it's down to teams making fights, though. I think he'd have taken it whenever. And I think that there's a lot of money on the table. I don't think Wilder was probably too concerned, really, at the time. Like, I'm going to get Fury now before he gets any better. I want to knock him out. I think, although I give Fury the last fight, if they do fight again, Wilder will still think at this point in time that he can beat Tyson Fury.
What did you make of him as a guy when you met him? Did you speak to him much when you sparred him? Deontay Wilder.
Yeah, he came over for two of my training camps. He came over for the Klitschko fight and then the Tyson Fury fight that got aborted.
Nice guy.
Great guy. Plenty of energy, plenty of fun. We did loads of stuff behind the... He wasn't just a sparring partner. He really helped me with my training. Like, he put the body pad on. We'd work on drills. So he was really involved heavily in assisting me and getting the best out of me. I remember back then, I think it was only... He had like 25 or 26 fights unbeaten at the time. So he was still considered a prospect. He hadn't fought any big names. But yeah, I could see, and everybody in there knew, like, this guy... is going to be world champion one day. And it was just nice to have someone like dangerous, like every spar. If I left my chin hanging out, I had to be as focused for sparring as I would be for any one of my fights because he was going for the knockout in every round. But once the bell finished, hey, we're cool again. But it was nice to switch me on. You get some sparring partners, you go out, take a couple of jabs and just try to get a feel for it and I block. But nah, none of that. You just get sparked if you do that with him.
Is it good to sometimes have that fear in sparring?
Of course, I think that's when you perform best in sparring. If you're sparring guys who are beneath your level constantly, sometimes they'll end up getting the better of you because you're like just going through the motions and not really caring too much and maybe not wanting to take advantage of the lesser guy. Mm. So they clip you with shots you wouldn't normally get clipped with against a very good fighter. So when you're fighting good guys, you're definitely, you have to switch on a lot more. And I can't speak like like, for, I can't speak for David, but you have to switch on for Wilder. You know what I mean? He's a serious puncher.
Believe me, I know.
Yeah. You're listening to TK on Joe with me, Chris Lloyd and Carl Frampton, together with 32 Rebber, a podcast and YouTube show. You can subscribe via the usual channels. Now, though, here's Russell Kane with news of something else from Joe.
Thanks, Chris. I'm Russell Kane. Please subscribe to my podcast, Boys Don't Cry. It's fascinating. Much needed. It's not men in cardigans talking about their feelings, and it's not men talking about boobs and football. It's men being provoked into honestly talking about the things you wish they'd talk about, ladies. So lads, listen in for the awkwardness. Ladies, listen in with nosiness. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And by the way, I'm not Nick Grimshaw.
Cheers, Russell. Welcome back to TKO here on Joe, round nine, with former heavyweight world champion David Hay and Carl Frampton. When was the first time you met David?
Do you remember?
Is it the 2001 Belfast?
2001 Belfast.
He remembers.
That's good that he remembers, because I've told him a story before. That's a funny story. So I'll tell a story. It's pretty funny. So 2001 was I 14. But as a 14-year-old, I looked like I was 10. And I was over some of the boys from our... Actually, my dad was like volunteering, because if you volunteered and helped out, you got free tickets to all the shows. So I got like a week and a half off school to go to all the fights.
Was this in between being a lemonade salesman?
In between that. I hadn't started that job yet.
Oh, sorry. That's later down the line.
Anyway, I was in the canteen and I was sitting with my dad and someone else. Can't remember who else was there. And David was in the table next to me with Carl Froch. Oh, you got a silver and Froch got a bronze, is that right? Yeah. So I'm sitting there, and David was only a kid at the time. Well, 19.
Yeah, right.
So I didn't know who he was, but I had heard of Courtney Fry.
Oh, this is the world, so of course.
Yeah, the world's in Belfast. So I got up, plucked up the courage to go over and ask David, "How you doing, David?" I was like trying to get my little program signed. I didn't say David because I didn't know who he was, but it says, are you Courtney Fry? And he was eating, he just went, "No, I'm the other one." I just continued eating and I went and sat down to say,
wow.
So bad, so
don't
bad.
Worry about it.
That's amazing.
It's a long time ago.
What are the chances? And then we were. How many years later then? 15 years later, you end up in the same camp together.
Yeah.
Crazy.
I've been trained by Shane McGuigan. You was already been trained
I
by
was, yeah.
Shane. I'd watched his progress, and when I wanted to, I was looking for a trainer. Shane was top of the list. I'd seen what he'd done with you. I'd seen your style, the way you moved, the punch variety. I thought, I like me some of that. And obviously, worked with Shane, and it worked great.
Yeah.
I really, really enjoyed the energy in the gym. And
I enjoyed it too.
Yeah,
I enjoyed it. See, the big man here, it gets, probably be fair in saying, you would get a bit of stick on social media from time to time, but knowing you, it's like, David's so generous. He's like a top guy, really nice guy, very generous, looked after me, felt like he kind of took me under his wing a wee bit as well, so that's something I appreciate, man.
Oh, pleasure,
I guess that sort of like the public response to you depends on how much you decide to put yourself out there. I mean, we've seen Anthony Fowler kind of, he put a picture of a pie up and said, "I'm having some humble pie, I'm serving myself some after what happened this weekend." Listen, we saw the way you put yourself out there in the build-up to the Klitschko fight and some of the others. Did you make a conscious decision to become almost like a slightly polarizing character to push your career?
Yeah, 100%. You know, one thing I realized over the years is, as sad as it is, being a good boxer and getting good results isn't enough. You need more than that. You know, there are many fighters, many world champions who earn peanuts because they don't have a fan base. They don't have an emotional connection with the fans. You need fans. I said it before, you need fans to either really like you and want to support you, want to pay money to see you win, or you want people to pay money to see you lose, or pay money to, they have to, having it in the middle where they don't really care isn't putting any money into the event, which means you don't get paid anything. So after the Macronelli fight, I then had to really switch it on in terms of, I'm now moving to the heavyweight division. I'm a cruiserweight champion, and you know, I've just filled out the O2 Arena. I'm generating the money now. It's time to then start screaming and shouting. So then I had to switch the haymaker on, full maximum strength. And it were, you know, chasing around Vladimir and doing all that stuff. It really generated the hype and really got my name out there. You know, some people thought I was a dick. Some people thought it was funny. But either way, people felt something. People knew who I was because it was like the back page news. And I just continued it throughout my career, and it seemed to work a treat.
That just reminded me. You see the Klitschko stuff on Sky? Where you're talking about his Borat voice, and he's going to shake the hand, David. But you're laughing. He's trying not to laugh, but you were laughing, definitely laughing.
It was a good TV. People want that. That's why WWE is so popular, as always has been. It's because people want to see big characters saying things, doing things.
Your mate Andy Shepherd's on the way to WrestleMania at the moment, isn't he? I went to uni with him.
You know what?
Yeah, good friend of mine.
Good guy.
He is.
But he'll tell you himself, people want to see the hero and the heel. They want to see, you know, people who don't like each other. No one's interested in two people who respect each other and want to hug each other before the fight. Good luck. I hope I don't hurt you. I don't hurt you too. You know, no one wants that. People want to see genuine conflict. That's what boxing is, essentially, is two guys fighting each other. And everybody likes to see, you know, Mickey Ward and Arturo Gatti. That's one of those rare occasions when you get two guys with no animosity whose styles gelled three times to the point where it was some of the greatest fights you've ever seen in life. It's so rare that happens. But, you know, Floyd Mayweather, Nassim Mohamed, you know, these Mike Tyson, you know, guys who've got very controversial careers and stuff that happens behind the scenes just converts into cash for everybody around.
Could have helped my mate Leo Santa Cruz, but the fucker won't fight me for a third time. I'm trying long enough. I'm giving up.
Do you think it's not going to happen?
Don't know. Well, I'm saying the Top Rank now, so the Oscar Valdez fight is probably the more realistic one, but I can't kind of wait on Leo Santa Cruz and let him dictate my career.
Yeah, but if you can now have a belt off Valdez, then that will tempt Santa Cruz into the third one.
Why?
There's your thinking. I should have been a promoter. We'll come on to that in a minute, because that's obviously your latest venture. I guess at that point, though, when Vladimir Klitschko had reigned for so many years, those kind of actions and that sort of outrageous behaviour with the heads on the sticks and T-shirts and the game that you bought out.
Yeah.
I got that, by the way. I couldn't believe it. I thought, I'm buying this. But everyone buys into it.
Yeah.
But it was a welcome antidote for a very, very stale heavyweight division that had been that way for a long time, really.
Yeah, of course. I think it always brings something to the mix and adds something to the heavyweight division, which was kind of boring for a while. And then it got boring again there for a few years. And then, like, Fury and stuff and Wilder come on the scene when they're knocking guys out. The Klitschko reign was pretty boring.
Like the wilderness years, weren't they, really?
But Klitschko's best fight, I'd say, was the Anthony Joshua fight. In terms of excitement, entertainment. You know, easily. But it took him to get to 40-odd years old for that to happen. Mm. But it's a shame that, you know, the fight that entertained everybody the most, he lost.
Yeah.
He unfortunately lost that fight. But, you know, fortunately for Joshua, it showed the new generation. You know, the universe can't have a 40-year-old beating a young, undefeated, young lion like Joshua. So I think the right guy won the fight. And off the strength of that really brought heavyweight boxing back, because it was a massive event in Germany, in America, over here. It was huge. It was sold out Wembley. So I think that was putting boxing was back then. On that night, it was really back. You know, AJ was huge anyway, but that just solidified him as one of the all-time, you know, biggest pulls in the heavyweight division.
Yeah, we had to show a lot that night, didn't we, in terms of resilience.
And he hadn't had to up until that point. No. He had a little scare against Dylan White. He wasn't knocked down, but he was really hurt in this fight. Yeah. And a lot of people wasn't sure. I wasn't sure. You know, I assumed he had what it took, but I didn't know. You know, I was looking at him as an opponent at that time, thinking, I'll do this, I'll do that. You know, and he got drilled real hard, but he smiled, he got up and he turned the tables.
Yeah.
And that's what a true champion is.
You have to have a real gut check.
Yeah.
And even boxers are looking, right, Olympic champion, and he's a big lad and he's brilliant, but there's still them questions about heart until someone gets hurt.
Yeah.
And he showed tremendous courage.
Does he get back up and walk back into the firing line, or does he stay down? Does he try and wait to get out of the fight? And, you know, he stood up and thought, okay, you want to play this game? Okay, you want to play rough? Okay.
Yeah, incredible. Unbelievable. I mean, because you got hit with that big Klitschko right hand a couple of times, but I think your style lends itself to taking the sting out of shots much more than Joshua's. If he gets hit flush, he gets hit flush.
Yeah.
How hard's that right hand, the Vladimir Klitschko?
Yeah, it's very hard. It's very hard. I think the way the shot that he got hit with a bit higher on the head.
Yeah.
I move my head quite well, and the sparring I did with Deontay Wilder really woke me up. So my reflexes are super sharp. So I didn't take anything. I took a few shots flush, but nothing that would knock me out. But he's got a heavy-handed guy, and he's so big and awkward, and he's ungainly, and he puts his arms out, makes it difficult for you to get into range. And when you do, he clinches you, and he's so physically strong. He's like a whole size, couple sizes bigger than me. So it was an awkward fight. But he was very deceivingly fast. He had very, very quick hands.
Yeah, because that was one of the things that, you know, he'd relied on was the jab, jab, grab for so many years. Mm. And the one time he wasn't stronger than his opponent, Joshua broke free, landed that uppercut on the inside that sent him unraveling and kind of grabbed victory from the jaws of defeat.
He developed a style against guys that are a lot smaller than himself.
Yeah.
So he was able, when he fought Alexander Povetkin, same thing, jab, jab, grab,
push him down.
And when you've got a big, rock solid, 18-stone man pushing you down, it's a lot of weight. And he was able to do it for so long, that became his style. So he tried to do that against AJ. AJ is the same size. You can't play that game with him. Whereas AJ doesn't do that. AJ stands and fights you like you should do. Mm. And Klitschko wasn't able to match him fight for fight and end up getting chin. So, you know, it's good that AJ's developed a style which is very fan-friendly.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of heavyweights use their size and hold and lean. But, you know, he stands there and lets his hands go. Mm. Which is fun for everyone watching. It's easy to be a fan of someone who fights with the style that he's got.
So, I mean, this round robin that we're currently being dragged through the muck with Wilder, Fury and AJ, we know obviously on different TV networks now, different promotional entities, a lot of back and forth about money. Mm. Is it frustrating as a guy who, and I know you miss fights through injury, but this isn't that. This is actually people actively moving away from fights and not making them happen when really they could just happen. What's it like for someone that's kind of now got the promoter's hat on?
It's boxing. You get, you know, whenever there's a fighter who can generate, you know, tens of millions, you know, the people within the teams want to continue that journey because every time they fight, they get a cut, they get a percentage. So do they want to put their cash cow in a fight where it's a 50-50 fight, or do they want an 80-20 chance of winning, as then being the 88% chance of continuing their paydays throughout the years? So I'm sure all of the teams want these big fights, but they want them after they've had five or six smaller fights when they've kept getting paid. And unfortunately, boxing, as much of a sport is, it's a business. And it's not regulated like tennis or football where, you know, Manchester United, so I can't say I'm not playing Arsenal.
Right.
Because, you know, you can't do it. You just have to fight. Or tennis player, you don't see Federer say, I'm not playing Nadal if you don't pay me X amount. Here's what it is.
Because that is the beauty of UFC, isn't it? Is that ultimately, it's got its flaws, but the best fight, the best, otherwise they're out.
Exactly. But the thing is, give it another 10 years and you've got Bellator and you've got these other organisations, and they're all trying to be competing with UFC. Mm. And that's what UFC is now, is what boxing used to be.
Mm. Yeah, it's true.
UFC seems kind of bigger than any of the fighters. The only time I've seen it really was when Ronda Rousey was champion and Conor McGregor.
Yeah,
they're the only two names that have really kind of become bigger than the sport of the mixed martial arts of sport, and UFC is the promotional entity that have generated these two superstars, and they're very few and far between. You know, it makes huge money, but it's not any one individual MMA fighter that earns it. It's the organization. It's worth billions now.
Yeah.
And I don't think any other, it'd be tough for another organization to reach those heights. But it's so popular, it's such a grand sport, and people know when they tune in to whether it's Bellator, whether it's UFC, they're going to get value for money you've got these, even if a guy's 10-2 in boxing, you wouldn't really rate him that highly.
Yeah.
But it doesn't work like that because the best fight the best so often, they kind of accept that not everyone can win. No one says, you know, Djokovic isn't great because he's lost 8 matches in the last 5 years, or it happens. If the best fight the best, then everyone's evenly matched. It just depends on the day. You know, you can get different people win at different times. And the thing I like about mixed martial arts, people accept a loss You could get, there's so many, thousands of different ways you can lose.
And it's far less detrimental, the O in MMA, yeah, than it is in boxing.
Yeah, and I think that's a good thing. I think that's why that the sport of mixed martial arts is growing, is because people aren't afraid. Like, you know, we've got the heavyweight division at the moment. You've got three champions, all of them claiming they're number one. Rarely does that happen in mixed martial arts. You know, rarely do you have like three or four people at any one division claiming they're the best. It's like, no, they just fight each other and figure out. Yeah. We know who's the best. And I think that's why mixed martial arts has a little edge over boxing in terms of clarity to the fans. It's easy to be a mixed martial arts fan because you get to see the best fight the best all the time.
See, talking about the zero in boxing, it means a lot more, I think, in the UK than anywhere else. For an example, I was speaking to Paddy Barnes today, who lost his last fight. He says the amount of Americans and Mexicans, although he lost to a bigger guy, but he put up a good fight and showed great courage in the fight. The amount of Americans and Mexicans who have followed him on Twitter and Instagram saying, we can't wait to see you fight again, has been insane. But UK fighters are like, oh, you get beat, you're shit. You know, that's you on the scrap.
There are certain fighters. I mean, Gabriel Rosado is probably the best example in recent times of a fighter who's lost multiple fights, and he's lost 11 or 12 now, against really top opposition, all in their prime. And his stock, relatively speaking, hasn't really dropped. Khan is of course another one. He's lost a lot of high profile fights. His stock is still kind of sky high in the grand scheme of things, still getting big fights. But we're still some way from getting away from that stigma attached to the O in boxing. What do you think is there anything that can change that?
Just people, the fans need to stop being so harsh when a fighter loses. For instance, let's just say Anthony Joshua has the mega fight against Deontay Wilder, for instance. And it's a 50-50 fight, close fight. Both get knocked down, and then one wins on a split decision. Okay, is the other one terrible? Oh, his career's over, he's finished, he needs to retire. Yet the other one who won on a split decision, he moves forward, and it's like a close fight. You know, you could put three other judges, you might have a different decision. Just because the end result says one thing doesn't mean that's who you are. You're not a loser because just one judge had it one way or another. So you can't say someone's a loser. They just lost that particular fight. And you can always come back and do it again. I think people need to start, at the top level, multiple fights against the best. That's why, you know, Lennox Lewis fighting, Tyson, Holyfield twice. You know, he didn't get that fight with Riddick Bowe. And that fight not happening kind of put a little bit of a kink in the heavyweight division of that area. Of just one fighter not fighting, because we don't know how it happened. I think Lennox would have won. But Riddick Bowe was a great fighter. We never know. He beat him in Olympic finals, but we wanted to see it as a pro. We didn't get to see that. I really hope this era doesn't have that same missing link. You know, because outside of Riddick Bowe, everyone seemed to have fought everybody. You know, and...
because, I mean, it is booming right now. We're at a point where... You know, there's more money in the sport than ever before. There are more opportunities transatlantically for UK fighters probably than ever before. Your man is now Derek Chisora. Didn't think I'd be saying that 3 years ago. And neither you, surely.
No, I didn't think so. You know, but Derek, you know, he kind of must have looked at his career, looked at where he was, looked at what he could do, and may have looked at my career and thought, you know, I think, you know, David could assist guiding me, you know, the right path, not only in the ring, but also outside of the ring. You know, strength and conditioning is nutrition, you know, from sleeping hours, all literally I try to give her as much assistance as I can. So he just needs to focus on waking up, eating what he's supposed to eat, going to the gym, who drives him to the gym, how long that takes, what route he takes. There's a million different things that can take the stress away from a fighter.
That's more a mentor than a manager, though, isn't
it? Yeah, mentor, manager. You know, I've been through it. I know what it's like. I know how it feels to, you know, have to cook your food after a trainer. You've got to, you know, take your supplements and have your protein shakes and do all these, so many different things. And a fighter just needs to worry about getting the ring fighting. So putting an infrastructure around him where he can get the best out of himself, and we've teamed up with Dave Caldwell, who's done wonders in the short time he's been with him. I was watching him sparring the other day, and you know, a lot of Derek Chisora's past flaws or things I'd say were weaknesses, you know, Dave's really started to build his armory. So he's moving his head, he's throwing good counter punches, he's not so square on, he's just looking like the very best version of Derek Chisora. I mean, he's need to be. Just saying that Gashi, is a bit of a handful.
Yeah.
You know, he took a fight, you know, Derek's opponent on the 20th of April at the O2 Arena. He took on...
Carlos Takam, wasn't it?
Carlos Takam on 2 days' notice.
And you know all about Carlos Takam.
Yeah, Carlos Takam's, you know, so does Derek, you know, he's a right handful. So he took him on 2 days' notice and gave a good account of himself. He got stopped, but he wasn't fit. He only had two days' notice for the fight. This time around, he's had like 6-7 weeks' notice. He's in shape, he's coming to fight, and he really wants it. So Derek hasn't got a knockover job, as they call it in the game. He's got a real tough fight. You know, could go 10 rounds, and this guy's really, really coming to win. And we'll see how the combination of the strength conditioning of Ruben Tabárez, his coach, is working with his coach Danny up in Rotherham, Sheffield. So we'll see how it's all sort of materialised. And I think that we're going to see something special. And I don't think that Derek Chisora journey is... I think it's just starting. I think he showed in his last fight against Dillon White, you know, going 11 rounds. He was leading on the scorecards after having a couple of points deducted. Yeah. He showed that he belongs at that level. You know, if Dillon White is considered the number one contender, which he is,
Derek was beaten,
he was beaten up to 11 rounds. So, you know, obviously, it's a 12-round fight.
Yeah.
But it showed he belongs in and around that level. You can't say he doesn't after that. So I think now he's better than he was for that fight. Physically, technically, tactically, he's a better shape now than he was for that last fight. So I think he's in amongst the world level, and we want to just show people.
Here's one for you. Like, you, knowing you and knowing, like, you can read a fight well and tactically you know what you're talking about and even just listening to you here, you can tell that. You're managing now. Would you ever train a fighter?
To train a fighter, it takes maybe more time and energy than I have realistically. It takes as much time as the fighter. You know, I've sacrificed X amount of years for professional boxing, and if I wanted to be a world class coach, I'd need to be in the gym every single day. Yeah. I'd need to be studying tapes. I need to be, you know, watching his sprints, watching his weight training, making sure. Because whenever I do something, I kind of immerse myself in it and want to be the very best at it. And at the moment, I don't think I've got enough time to do it. I don't. Because you wouldn't
when
want
I
to
get
do
asked
it,
that question, that's the exact answer. Yeah, I don't.
Anyone can say, "Yeah, I'm your trainer. Yeah, great." And you know, throw a jab. Yeah, left hook. Yeah. It takes more than that. You have to live and breathe it. You really, really have to live and breathe it. You've got to take the punches. You've got to be in there. You've got to be with them, watching every single sparring, every pad session, every shadow box, and you've got to watch it. You've got to record it. Go home and watch it more if you're the best. This is what Dave Caldwell does. Dave Caldwell lives and breathes it.
It's unreal.
You know, he's at home. He watches the sparring. He watches the opponent. He watches, you know, he watches historical fight. He understands it. He lives and breathes it. And that's all he does.
Mm.
And that's why he's so successful.
Yeah.
So I think I could be a good trainer.
But you'd have to give up everything
else. I'd have to give up everything else. And, you know, I've put enough into this game of boxing.
You put enough into table tennis and,
exactly,
and poker.
Exactly. At the moment, I think that to be the very best coach, it takes a hell of a lot of time and energy.
How did you reconcile your differences with Derek? Did it sort of all subside after the fight, or did you have to have a conversation?
No, I've never, you know, after we had our fight, Upton Park, you know, we had a clear winner, and that was it. Since that point, there's never really been any beef in any sense. I've seen him out and about. We hang out in the same places. We know similar people, you know, same people, and we've got friends in common. And we see each other out. We're always super, super polite and super cool with each other. Obviously, there's that rival thing. You know, you're a boxer, I'm a boxer. We were both active boxers at the time, you know. But, you know, I think, you know, it must have taken a lot for him to, you know, a lot of mental strength for him to say, I tell you what, David, you know, after all we've been through, you know, could you help me take that next level? And, you know, you've got to respect the man who, you know, puts his potential, whatever differences he may have had, to decide to look to progress himself. You know, a lot of people cut their nose off to spite their face.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, their ego, they don't want to be seen to want anyone else's help.
Yeah.
But I think he got to a point where he thought, okay, I know I'm world class. I want to take it to that next level. And it showed in his last fight that he was so much better in his last fight against Dillon White than he was against Carlos Takam.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, although he got the win against Takam, he got battered for most of that fight. But this fight, he was winning the fight. Mm. So I think it showed that he's done the right thing. And the whole infrastructure around him now is that of a world-class athlete. Mm. Now, I think he was playing at box up to that point. You know, he trained when he was in the gym, but outside of the gym, he wasn't really living the life as he should do. And this time round, he knows this is kind of his last chance. He's 35 years old. He can't afford to have any losses now. He knows, you know, he wants a real run at this heavyweight title. The heavyweight division's amazing. There's so much money. There's so much prestige. There's so much, so many eyes on the heavyweight division. There's, you know, just three people who considered number one. Mm. So there's plenty of routes, and they all need big opponents.
Who's your number one?
My number one at the moment, I'd say, is Anthony Joshua. For the simple fact, he's undefeated. Yeah. He doesn't have a draw.
Who's the best of the three?
I genuinely think on their day, each of them have the ability to beat the others. I think Tyson Fury has the ability to outbox both Wilder, which he kind of did for most of the fight, and
AJ.
Yeah. AJ. I think AJ can blast both of them out if he catches them on the chin, and the same thing for Wilder.
Yeah.
I think they've all, on their day, they all have the ability and the skill set to do it. I just think Anthony Joshua has had the toughest path so far, and he's proven in the ring what he can do. It's not about potential that he has. He hasn't had any draws. He hasn't had any close fights. No, the only fight he got dropped, he got back and knocked out Klitschko.
Yeah, yeah.
So on paper, he's fought the tougher guys. He fought Joseph Parker, who was undefeated, who was a champion.
Pavetkin as well,
done an absolute number on him. So he's, every time he's been stepped up, he's passed the test with flying colours. So has the other two.
Yeah.
But they've both had a close fight against each other. So I can only judge him on their record. They both got a draw. There was no winner. There was no loser, but there was no winner. They both had a fight where there was no winner. That's not happened to AJ. So on looking at their records, I'll go with a guy who's never had a draw, because there's an argument this way. Yeah. There's no argument with Joshua at the moment. But he hasn't fought anyone as good as Wilder or Fury yet. So it's all up in the air.
It is, you're right. Question for you then. Chuck a prime David Haye into the heavyweight mix. So we're saying, I mean, listen, I'm going to let you decide what your prime was. I'm going to say probably around the 2012 mark, the Lick and I value fight, something like that. At heavyweight, would you say? Or maybe a little bit later? When do you feel like your peak year was as a heavyweight?
Yeah, I'd say...
When you were champion, presumably.
I'd say physical peak. It's tough. Value was where I was able to do what I needed. It wasn't a physical... it was more of an athletic performance opposed to a tough boxing match. I didn't take many punches in that fight. I'd say around about that point, against Aldi Harrison, I was really in good nick for that one.
How does he get
I think similar to his answer a minute ago, like if you fire a prime David Haye into the mix against prime Fury, Wilder, Joshua, I think they all have the ability to beat each other on their nights. And it's one of them ones, they all fight each other 10 times, it could be 5-0. Yeah. One of them ones.
You can make an argument for it, either of us to beat any of us. You know, it nearly happened with Fury. Oh, nearly got
I'd love to have seen it.
But if that would have happened and I would have won, everyone would have said he was too young then. He was only 21 at the time. So, you know, so even if I would have done, it would never have.
There's always caveats.
There's always caveats in everything. But it's just good that we have the three guys in the same era at the moment, similar sort of ages. They're both hungry. They're all undefeated. So it's just a very healthy time.
They could all fight each other two or three times. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, we hope this is what happens. You talk about like Ali and Frazier and Foreman and stuff. Yeah. I mean, you're going
Ken Norton, man.
Yeah.
But like, some great fights.
Why not? Why not? You know, why not have two fights, three fights?
Yeah.
Why not?
That'd be lovely, wouldn't it?
It'd be great. It'd be great. It'd be great for boxing. And that all fighters have such big, engaging personalities. All of the fighters are superstars. Yeah. You know, all of them. You know, look at Wilder. You know, he's just such a big personality. Even without the cameras rolling, even when he's in the gym he's a massive personality. He's a fun guy. He's just a great guy to be around. And you know, I haven't spent much time with Fury, but apparently he's the same. He's a right laugh. And you know, AJ. You know, it's just a great time to be in amongst the heavyweight division.
Are you able in retirement now to just relax a bit and enjoy the company of those other guys? Because is there an element that when you're an active fighter, you have to be guarded around people who are your competition?
Nah, not really. I've always been quite relaxed. I've never really felt, you know, I never really felt, you know, even like, for instance, with when Wilder was in the gym, you know, he was a young heavyweight up and coming. I didn't think anything of it. He was just helping me out in sparring. I knew there'd possibly be a chance he'd then, obviously after 25 or whatever, his record, 25 fights unbeaten, you know, he could be the next guy. He was thinking he was coming up the rankings at the time. But I never treat them any differently because of it. You know, I always, you know, what will be,
yeah.
And you know,
and here we are.
The heavyweight division is the division where anything can happen. You know, any opponent. You know, the fact that I'm managing Derek Chisora now. Who would have thought that could happen? Who would have thought I'd have fought Tony Bellew and lost twice? Yeah. Anything could happen yeah. in the heavyweight
yeah,
division.
When you put it like that,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, it's just so all over the place. But that's what makes the heavyweight division.
Just speaking about Chisora, like. And talking about him being like a proper professional now.
Yeah.
A proper professional Derek Chisora is a very exciting ingredient into the mix here.
Yeah. Well, you think after that second Fury fight, I can remember it was quite a while ago. Now I'm just thinking we're not going to see him again.
He wasn't in
and
shape.
Then here we are 5 years later and he's in better shape and with better prospects.
Yeah, he wasn't in shape for that fight. You can see it. He was undermotivated. He was just going through the motions. And that guy's gone now. That guy is completely gone. He's... You know, he's got a spin bike in his apartment. He lives up in Sheffield. He's living like a real professional. It's crazy to think that he's been a professional for 12 odd years. But now he's only finally the last, you know, up before the Dillian Whyte fight is the first time he really started to take things seriously.
Yeah.
He came down to my gym. He did the sessions. I was doing the sessions with him. And he was living and breathing. I could see it. You could see it in his body shape. Everything changed. And I'm sure he'll wish he did that years prior. But everything happens for a reason. Here we are.
Yeah.
And you know he's at a stage now where he can really do something special. We haven't seen people where I've seen it behind closed doors. Dave Colbell's seen it. Not very many people have seen him in the shape he's at, throwing the shots he can throw. He can throw combinations from start to finish.
He never used to be able to do that.
He used three or four combinations. He was walking forward, taking shots, wasn't moving his head, sort of blocking punches with his face. Now he's slipping, countering. He's a completely different animal. Mm. And as you said, he's a problem for people. Yeah. He'll be a real, real problem.
It's going to be very interesting. We'd love to get you and him on the show together at some point to talk about your history and the journey you took together. Would you be up for that?
Yeah, of course.
That'd be great. We'll speak to Derek.
Couldn't afford it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's all right. I'll forego my fee for the day. It's fine. Before we go, we do this thing called the 32-second challenge with 32 Red. So it's 32 seconds. I'm going to read you a list of single words and I need you to think of the first thing that comes into your head and just say it out loud. Can you do that for me?
Okay.
Right, okay. I'm just going to check that our producer, Si's got the stopwatch ready. He has. Okay, 32-second challenge. Here we go. Peabody Estate.
Bermondsey.
Fitzroy Lodge.
Child.
Carl Thompson.
Warrior.
Valuev.
Giant.
Winning a world title.
Destiny.
John Ruiz.
Tough as our boots.
Millwall.
Hooligan.
Ollie Harrison.
Good friend.
Klitschko.
Holding.
Chisora.
War.
Joshua.
Classy.
Frampton.
I was going to say that.
Go on, what are you going to say?
Time is up. But I'm going to let you up. Start, so I'll let you finish.
I can't say that.
You have to now.
Carl Frampton.
Come on, David.
You have to tell me after.
Yeah.
Midget?
Oh, come on.
What do you mean, come on? I wouldn't have thought that was bad.
Table tennis.
We'll get you guys playing a game next time.
See if I'm known just for my table tennis exploits, I'll die a happy man.
I'm not convinced you're as good as everyone says.
No, he is, trust me.
He's all right. Well, listen, what a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing. And good luck to Derek on the 20th of April as well at the O2, isn't it?
Still some tickets left, so get down. You know, it's going to be a great fight.
Master promoter.
Many thanks to David Hay. We'll be back in 7 days' time, as always. Remember to check out our other episodes here on Joe. Other shows as well, House of Rugby with James Haskell, Mike Tindall and Alex Payne. And, of course, Boys Don't Cry with Russell Kane. This has been TKO Round 9, done and dusted. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you in 7 days' time.
You've been listening to TKO on Joe, together with 32 Red.